This moment before a talk is very juicy. I hate to disturb it. And there are many moments like this. They're auspicious moments before something happens. Before the bell rings, there is a moment of attention, of anticipation. Before the curtain goes up, there's that, right? Waiting. Or for me, the moment before the choir begins to sing, that silence, and then these voices, or the orchestra, the first note in a symphony, the moment before that, or when we're in the tea hut or having tea, when I look at that bowl of matcha, that green, that moment before I pass it on. The moment before a hug. Or before entering the doctor's office to get some test results. These kinds of moments are our practice. And I was thinking here we've been sitting for 40-minute periods. And during my old homesteading days, I discovered that it takes 40 gallons of maple sap to make 1 gallon of maple syrup. 40 minutes of sitting to make 40 seconds of pause in our life. If we can walk out of here into our lives with 40 seconds of this every now and then, we will have earned something from this practice. We distill this, I've been thinking of it as a pause, out of these 40-minute periods, we squeeze, 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 and get 40 seconds of quiet in our lives, of just stopping. We can get that. It's like the perfume of our practice. My mother used to sell perfume, may she rest in peace. She used to sell perfume in Macy's. She was a pretty high-end saleswoman. She was representing these three French perfume companies. But I was always fascinated by the different kinds of fragrance she would sell. There would be what was called a toilet water, which was a lot of water and a little fragrance from the flower. And then there's cologne, which is more, a little more fragrance of the flower and a little less water. a little more expensive, and then there's perfume. Tiny little bottles, hardly any water, but the essence of the flower, very expensive. So this is our practice. We have this water, this vast water of our lives, and we come here and sit and sit and sit, and we distill this stillness and silence to a pause in our lives during our day. So I've been thinking about this a lot, and thinking about the pause button on so many of our appliances and equipment and computers. Press the pause button. And I kind of was looking in that pause button and thinking, well, this is a symbol, an emblem of our practice. It's like this, right? Pause. It's like this. And it's got a circle around it. So that circle is the Enso. It's the big picture. So every time you see an Enso, put a pause in the middle. And every time you see a pause button, draw an Enso around it. So here we have our way. Birth, death, past, future. Inhale, exhale, you know, all the dualities. And we've just kind of held them, held that space. This is the middle way, right? It's the middle way. Where we're going. This path. Who was it that said life is one continuous mistake? Is this some Zen teacher?
Dogen.
Oh my goodness. Dogen. But you know, you could look at life as one continuous pause. If you practiced well, it's not a stop. It's not the stop button. Because there is no stopping. Is no stopping. It's just life keeps going, keeps going, keeps glowing. But I think you got a ticket for a rolling stop the other day, or almost got a ticket. Sort of like, it's not a stop, but it's a rolling stop. And those lines really should be dotted lines, too, because they're not fixed. So even when we pause, we're still rolling. But we're rolling with a different way of being. We're rolling with a different quality of attention. Even in the pause, there's a preparation for pausing. There's a kind of a posture which we take. When we're ready to pause, we can feel that we're lifting ourselves out of a kind of mindlessness, and we're going to just sort of pause for a bit. And after we've paused, we've not stopped either. There's a kind of almost like an afterglow after a pause that's refreshing and attentive and fully present. You can get, there's a kind of wonderful feeling after that moment. So it reverberates, it vibrates. So when you decide to pause, when you decide to enter into that rolling stop mode, get quiet, get a little still, what is possible in that space that you have created, that we have created, that pausing space? Well, in that space, you can remember who you are. Which we tend to sort of forget in our kind of mindless moving around. We had purchased an apple pie for Shujiro a couple of days ago, and it was sitting in the refrigerator. And two of the carpenters, who were hungry carpenters at the time, had no idea that that pie had been purchased for someone else. And I went to retrieve it last night, and almost the entire pie was eaten. There was a little slice left. And as soon as I looked at that slice, I knew that there was a pause there. The slice was too small not to have been the result of a pause. And you know when you find the ice cream, the pint of ice cream, and there's just a little glob of it left in the corner, you know there was a pause before that. These are auspicious moments. They are times when something kicks in that we don't even have to think about. In fact, it's better not to. That there's a precept there. There's a precept in that empty pie with one little slice in it. A precept was operative. So we can remember who we really are, and those precepts can kick in. In that space, we can also return to our bodies. This sort of lump of flesh that we drag around with us and just basically are always up here. We can return to what our bodies are telling us and feeling. During the Kobin Memorial, someone noticed that, reported that toward the end of his teaching, toward the latter part of his teaching career, when Kobin was asked a question, the way he would answer, he would fiddle around with the person's posture. He would just kind of go around, push your shoulders down, put your back in. And this seemed to be a little puzzling to people, that he didn't respond verbally. He just kind of played with the person's body. And I thought, this is profound teaching. Because what this does is just brings the person back to the present moment, where the body is always, and the breath is always coming back to the breath. Okay, touching you here, now. This is where all the answers are. Here, right now, right here. This is where our life is. So this pause allows us to be present, fully engaged, inhabiting our bodies, inhabiting the presence of our bodies. I have lots of mantras that I use in that space, and I bet you have one or two also, that these ways of remembering, of bringing yourself fully in accord with who you really are and what is actually happening. Sometimes when I'm in the samsaric loop of criticism and blaming and judging other people, my mantra is, how is this me? And that arises in that space. How is this me? Or, what I'm thinking about right now, what has this story that I'm playing in my head, what has this to do with what I'm doing right now? That's another one of my mantras. I am baking lasagna, and something is going round and round in my head. But what does that have to do with this? Nothing, usually. And so I can, all that mind stuff evaporates, and I can just be with baking lasagna, which is where my life is. I used to be told a lot as a kid and as an adult, think before you act. Just really think before you do anything. And I think our practice is, don't think before you act. That's what's getting you into trouble. In this space, you can connect with something before thinking, beyond thinking. This, call it intuition, call it the heart. You can connect with your heart, which is the only true wisdom that we have. So when you open this space, you can ask, what am I really feeling? What do I really feel here? Stop thinking. When I was in my 30s, way back, I went to my first professional conference as a university professor. And that was pretty impressive. All the members of my department were there. It was a professional conference. And members of other departments from adjoining universities were there. We had dinner together and had lots of good conversation and got to know each other better, other colleagues from other universities. And I got to talking with a colleague from the University of Albany. I had been teaching at Skidmore College. And he was not far from where I taught, and we just spent quite a long time talking with one another. I learned about his family. He had 6 children, and I had just been married, and I just had a baby sitting over there, 43 years old. And so we got to know each other, and after the dinner was over, we were on our way to our rooms and went to the elevator. And as the elevator started taking off, this man looked at me and he said, I want to sleep with you. I didn't realize this happens a lot at professional conferences, but it was the first time anything like that had ever happened to me. And I was quite shocked. And all kinds of, and here we're, I'm going up to my room in the elevator, and this was like this pause. Here's the elevator shaft. And we're going up. And this is like this bracket around my life. And I didn't really have that much time to think. But I immediately said no. That's all. I just said no. And I, thank goodness, the doors opened and I went to my room. But the funny part was that as I came into my room, at that time, I don't know whether they still have these, but there was a telephone. And there's message light on the telephone. This is absolutely a true story. And that message light was blinking. It's a red message light. This many years ago. And I call the desk, and it turns out my father left me a message. He was just checking in with me. And my father never called me like that. But my father, every date I ever had, my father would always be sitting up in the kitchen, making sure the guy left. So this was a fascinating serendipitous experience. Again, no thinking involved. It was just no. And confirmed by my father. That was right. Right thing. No question about it. So this notion of somehow at the beginning of the Platonic dialogue, the Phaedrus, Socrates asks Plato, he says, do we need anybody to tell us what's right and wrong? What's good and bad? No, we don't. This is something within us, our birthright. We just have to get in touch with it. We just have to get in touch with it. It's like smoking your first cigarette. I mean, at least I remember this. It's very clear. No. But then you just keep doing it and you've got a new normal. But the body knows. So we get back in touch, but we need to pause to do this. We forget. We're daydreaming. We're walking around in some kind of sleepwalking, some kind of mindless look. Can you give something your undivided attention? This feels pretty good. It feels like our attention in this room right now is undivided. This space allows us to give something undivided attention. I know what happens with my attention is I give it to something and then it starts sliding off. I want it to stay there, but I can just feel it sliding off. It just, oh, it's going, it's here. I was once interviewed by a television reporter about this center I had established, and he asked me about the history of it and what gave me the idea for it. I was doing this little TV thing, and he asked me this question. He put the microphone in front of my face, and then he was like this. Just wasn't paying attention at all. They were filming, and he was, you know, was like, that's the way it is most of the time. Maybe it's not as obvious as here's my invitation to you to connect, and now I'm somewhere else. It's not as obvious physically as that, but you can feel it. You can feel people's attention slipping away, and you can feel your own attention slipping away. But this gives you an opportunity to give your undivided attention to something. What a gift. And you know how you feel when someone gives you their undivided attention, not fragmented here and there and everywhere and multitasking and multi-attending. And so to be able to give that to someone, it really brings them alive. It brings the world alive when you can enliven it with your attention. This pausing, which I'm so grateful for everyone today to come and share this pause in our lives. It took effort. It took effort to travel here, to travel this road of the pause, and to say, I'm just, for this time, I'm going to just stop. I'm going to do this rolling stop. I'm just going to hang, settle in, settle down for a bit. And as we practice this, this is our practice, pushing, attending, becoming present, meeting life, moment to moment, giving our undivided attention. Our life does become more and more like one continuous pause, not just one continuous mistake. We can be redeemed from that mistake by staying with moment after moment. And so more and more this place of pausing and being present becomes our home. We live there. We dwell there more and more frequently for longer and longer periods. It's that place between the inhale and the exhale. And after the exhale, there's a pause. That's nirvana. That's equanimity. That's that settling. And then fully present, fully awake, being able to breathe in again, breathe out. And it's also a place of not doing. It's an active not doing, but it's, I don't have to, when you when you don't pause, you become really agitated and tense. So if you dwell, if you can dwell in that place of pausing between the exhale and the inhale, you get a sense of complete liberation, of not having to do, but allowing the inhale to just naturally happen. So you can say, like the other day, someone mentioned that there was a beautiful flower arrangement, and I did that flower arrangement, but it was attributed to somebody else. And I had this impulse to say, no, I didn't. I thought, oh, I don't have to say that. I just sit here and allow that to just be. I don't have to. Me! And it was wonderful. It was wonderful. It was liberation from ego, from attachment. So this can become our home, the place where we live. And every place can be a zendo. Supermarket, library, friend's house, workplace, doctor's office, before you enter your shrine room. Someone said, if you regard your workplace as a shrine room, you get paid to practice. It's a good deal. So, speaking of home, I'm getting ready to go back to Pennsylvania. And this has been home, this wonderful pause for me in my life for over a month. And I want to express my gratitude, especially to those residents of Chikoji and Chikoji's extended family for being so kind to me and so supportive. In the Celtic tradition, there are places that are called thin places. Where, I think Point Reyes is looking at those paintings, the reproductions that you gave me. I think Point Reyes is one of those thin places where you might say that the kind of the separation of time and eternity is hardly there, or between space and boundlessness. It's a very thin boundary, very thin boundary. Say the veil between time and eternity and space and spaces is lifted for a minute. I think Chikoji is one of those places where there is a very thin veil, and it's a great joy to be here, and very grateful for those who continue to keep it thin. To keep the veil very thin so that it can be easily lifted and we can be free. Thank you.